You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
Welcome to Manage Your Money God's Way, presented by Compass Catholic Ministry, teaching the way God would love all of us to handle money. And we do this using biblical principles to guide you through a journey to become financially free, or to put it another way, follow these principles and you will end up debt-free. We have a Bible study that we'll refer to often during the show today called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. This is a small group Bible study available to your parish. If you want to take a tour of the Bible study and see the various topics that are discussed, simply go to compasscatholic.org and click on Bible Studies. John and Evelyn, being the co-founders of the ministry, join me in the studio today. And this week we received an interesting email from one of our listeners and thought the content of the email would make for an excellent topic for the first part of today's show. We felt there's a number of points to be made and advice to share. So Evelyn, if you can share that question with us.
My husband and I are buying our home of 21 years, but we have a great deal of credit card debt. We are considering a consolidation loan to pay off debt, not including our mortgage, within 3 years. We were told that we would have an 8% annual percentage rate on the loan. Also, that our credit rating would drop for about 8 months, but would go back up. Does this sound too risky? Is there a better way to lower our monthly bills? We were also told to take out a new credit card for emergencies only. Please advise as soon as possible. Thank you. So what do you think of that question, John?
Well, there's a lot of data there. Unfortunately, there isn't enough data to really give precise answers. So we're going to have to talk kind of around the question and in generalities in order to fully explore what the question, there's multiple questions in there, actually, and the multiple answers. We have to make some assumptions here. Number one, you're in the process of buying your home. And number two, you've lived in that home for 21 years and hopefully only have a maximum of 9 years left on your mortgage. That assumes that you haven't refinanced previously. We assume that you have a significant amount of credit card debt because you're wanting to consolidate it.
Yeah, and that's not listed anywhere in here, is it?
Not the amount. Number. Yeah. The total debt payments that you are paying currently are making it difficult to meet your living expenses. That's kind of an assumption based on what you've said, because you're trying to lower your monthly payments. And the HELOC, or the home equity loan rate that was quoted to you, is 8%. So these are all assumptions, or you actually mentioned 8% in your question. You know, the things that you didn't provide that are important and would really be helpful in answering the question is, well, what is the current interest rate on your house, on your mortgage? If you've had the loan for 21 years and haven't refinanced, maybe you're paying 9% interest rate. So it could be really high, and that's a way to lower just without taking out equity. Do you really only have 9 years left, or have you refinanced two or three times and you still got 25 years left on your mortgage? And what's the value of your home? And if you take money out of the mortgage, are you going to be in an upside down position or really close to being fully
in trouble?
In trouble, yeah.
Was that a good enough word?
Unfunded.
Unfunded.
And the most important thing, I think, that you didn't tell us is if you've stopped using your credit cards, that's a really, really key issue when you start talking about debt consolidation. And, you know, you want to lower your monthly payments. Are you currently able to meet the minimum payments on your existing debt? So, you know, there was a lot of data that you gave us in the question, but there was a lot more things that really are necessary to provide a full and complete answer.
So even though you don't have all of the details you'd like to have, there's still some general principles we can talk about, and that might help the person come up with a solution, right?
Evelyn, you're absolutely right.
Oh, I love it when you talk like that.
We're going to try and see what we can at least shed some light and maybe provide some answers for anybody who might be thinking about this in their own personal financial situation. So, in order to use your home to pay off your credit card, you have to take money out of the equity on your house.
So if your house is worth $100,000 and you have a $20,000 mortgage, then theoretically you could get an $80,000 loan on your home to help pay off everything.
That's true.
Theoretically is the important word.
Theoretically is important. The key thing is, though, that if you don't pay your credit cards in a timely manner, you get way behind and then you just stop paying because you just throw your hands up in the air. The credit card companies could force you into bankruptcy, but they can't touch your house in the bankruptcy. However, if you take money against your home mortgage, against your home, basically, then your house comes into play in a bankruptcy type of situation, and you could lose your home.
So in other words, if these people get a HELOC loan, a home equity line of credit, mm-hmm. and a year, 6 months, 2 years, whatever down the road, they can't make the payments on that plus all their other debt,
yes.
then they'll be forced into bankruptcy. And one of the things that's at risk is the ownership of their house. The bank could repossess their house.
Boy, you are right on today.
You've been teaching me well.
What we're saying here is that using the equity in your home to pay your credit card debt is a really serious issue and is really not a great idea.
But why do so many people fall into that trap, John? Why do you think people do that?
Because the interest rate typically is fairly low on a home equity line of credit, and the money is there.
Because the banks are
more than willing to give you money off of something that they know has value. It's an easy thing.
That's, I think, what strikes my mind is it's an easy fix. I've gotten into this problem over many years by buying lots of stuff I really didn't need and charging it, and I just want a quick fix. I don't want to go through the trouble of the painful payoff of credit cards and denying myself anything or cutting back on my spending. I just want a quick fix so I can keep spending the way I want.
It's like that guy on the TV show that takes that little tiny pill and is instantly a mega brain, he knows everything. Well, that little tiny pill isn't going to happen to pay off your credit cards. And the biggest issue about doing a debt consolidation loan, whether you're doing it and taking money from your house or you're working with somebody and they're not taking anything that's secured, but they're just working with the credit card companies and reducing the interest rates and those kinds, consolidation can be a reasonable thing. The biggest thing you got to worry about, have you stopped using your credit cards? Or at worst, are you still using them, but you're able to pay off the new purchases at the end of every month?
But if you're paying off the new purchases, are you also making a dent in the old debt?
And that depends on the person. But the problem is, in most cases, like you said earlier, you want a quick fix, you want to wipe out that debt, but you haven't changed your habits. What typically happens is you get the quick fix, you got this debt consolidation loan, and so all that stuff is kind of over to the side now, and you're paying it with your mortgage and the home equity loan, but you're still over here charging like crazy and racking up more debt, which is new debt, and you're just making the hole deeper and deeper and deeper.
So it's kind of like somebody that goes on a diet and uses one of those extreme diets where they just drink shakes or something and they're not really changing their lifestyle of how they're eating, but they lose a whole bunch of weight.
Sure.
But then as soon as they're finished with the diet and they get to their goal weight, then they're back eating all the McDonald's and fries and diet sodas and all the bad things for them.
Once again, Evelyn, you are hitting the nail on the head.
Steve, write this day and time down, please.
Making a note of it all. You're 4 for 4.
You know, the other thing, Evelyn, that these people didn't mention was where they lived. And I went online to kind of check out to see what home equity lines of credit interest rates are. And the average seems to be, without a specific location in mind, kind of a national average, I guess, is between 4% and 5%.
Ooh, and they were quoted a rate of 8%?
They were quoted 8%.
Now, what impact their credit score may have on that percentage? I mean, it does seem really out of whack when you're talking 4 to 5 and they're paying 8, no matter what their score is.
That's pretty much it. You know, if they got 8% and the average is 4 to 5, then their credit score is probably way low.
And their credit history is not good.
Which would lead me to believe that maybe they're still charging in all probability because they got this history that would say that that's what they tend to do. So it's not the best of situation. So I think there are a few things that we could encourage you to do. And the first one is stop.
Stop what?
Stop using your credit cards for any reason. Just pay cash. Begin tracking every single penny, even if it's just a penny for a piece of gum. Or I don't know if you can get
you
penny gum anymore.
You can't buy gum for pennies.
So 10 cents. 10 cents, okay?
I think it's more like a quarter. It shows how long he's been. He visited a gumball machine.
And then seriously look at the things that you're spending money on and figure out what is absolutely necessary and what is not.
And I think that's where a lot of people fall into a black hole because everything they see around them, everything their friends have, everything they see on TV and magazines, they think they need, when in reality a lot of those things are wants,
absolutely,
not needs.
Absolutely.
Needs are food, clothing, and shelter.
Yes, yes. You know, I would suggest that they go onto our website, compasscatholic.org, and download the book, Your Money Counts, because you can do it for free. There's other things, though, that you could be looking at, like getting rid of cable TV, getting rid of newspaper and magazine subscriptions, eating out for any reason, getting rid of your cell phone or at least downsizing the plan that you have, no more new clothes. Those kinds of things are what you need to do.
And coming up after the break, we'll continue to go through the email that we received from a listener regarding advice on buying a home and handling all the debt that you may have. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministry. Now, right before the break, John mentioned a free ebook available to download. I want to give you that information one more time. The book is called Your Money Counts, and the book contains many of the items we deal with in detail in our Bible study. To download the free copy, go to compasscatholic.org and click on Bookstore and scroll to Your Money Counts. Evan, let's pick back up on that email question from a couple that want to purchase a home they live in, but they're dealing with debt.
So, John, this couple that wrote into us to ask for some financial advice, one of the things they were told, and here again, we're not sure who's telling them this, so we're not sure if it's coming from a Catholic biblical perspective, but they were told they should get a special credit card for emergencies. And what's your take on that? So that would be a no.
Okay, let me throw this out. What if they don't have the cash to pay for an emergency like Johnny broke his arm?
Well, I think that one of the things that they've got to do is they got to start saving right now, yesterday. And I know this kind of sounds crazy if they're already having troubles. If they would only pay, hopefully that the minimums aren't so much, that's all they can afford to pay is the minimums. But if they would only pay the minimum payment on all of their credit cards until they save $1,000, then they don't need to get that extra credit card. Because that's just going to add to debt.
It's more digging the hole deeper.
It is. It really is. And, you know, you got to remember what the definition of emergency is. Because in today's world, I ran out of bottled water. It's an emergency. We got to go buy something. An emergency is a serious, unexpected, and often dangerous situation requiring immediate action. And the next thing they should start doing is living on a spending plan. You already know how much money you got coming in and how much you're spending.
Because they've been tracking their spending, and that's important to do before you do the spending plan, right?
Absolutely.
Because
absolutely.
If you don't,
have to know.
It's a best guess.
Exactly.
And that's frustrating.
It is more than frustrating. So you design your spending plan around that amount of money that you've got coming in, that the net pay that you get in your paychecks. You know, this kind of sounds like gloom and doom, Evelyn, but really it's not. You know, the people have to remember that they didn't just wake up one morning and all of a sudden have all this huge, massive credit card debt. and you can't take a pill and make it go away. It's going to take probably a lot of time and a lot of hard work, but it can be accomplished with effort and dedication. And I know, because we were there, and we did it, and we considered doing exactly what these people talked about.
Well, I think the blessing for us was that it took something that we weren't talking about and gave us a way, wrapped in God's word, to talk about finances, because we were never on the same page about money when we got married.
Exactly.
We had two very different outlooks on how things should be done. And I think that the people that take our Navigating Your Finances God's Way study always find that it gives them a way to talk about money in a non-confrontational venue.
Yeah. So one of the things I wanted to mention here is that if you would like to work with one of our trained money coaches, just let us know by going to the website and sending us a message via the I've Got a Question link at compasscatholic.org. compasscatholic.org. It's a free service. You don't get charged. You're going to get some godly advice and some direction on how to handle your money issues. So I hope this question and kind of going through it has been helpful. These people are in a tough situation, and it requires tough solutions, but they can make it work.
Yeah, one of the pieces of advice that you offered at the beginning of the show about tracking their spending.
Yes.
You know, at compasscatholic.org, we have a spreadsheet that will help you in case you forget some category as you track the spending. And it's on the homepage. Just scroll down, and it's labeled Spreadsheet to Customize Your Budget.
Make sure you save it to your computer before you start filling it up.
Right, yeah.
You have to download and save it.
A reminder will tell you that as you click on it. But it's a great, great, great tool that you get in the habit of tracking that 1 cent piece of gum that John talked about. And where can you buy that 1 cent of gum, John?
I don't even know where you can get gum anymore.
He gets it from the underside of the table when he doesn't go out to eat.
I was thinking the same thing. Here, you want to share mine? Oh, Dentine.
So I ran across an article a couple of weeks ago by Peter Dunn, who he writes for the Indianapolis Star as a financial writer. And the basis for the article was that you can accomplish almost anything if you're willing to sacrifice.
Ooh, sacrifice. That's a good Catholic word, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So what Peter was saying is that if you want something bad enough, you should be willing to sacrifice for it. But therein lies the problem. Because some people don't try, and some people do try, and some people want to alter the definition of try.
And, like I put numbers down on a paper and slept on them, and now my budget's not working.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so based on their extraordinary effort, but there's ordinary effort, and then there's extraordinary effort. He talked about in the article stories of extraordinary effort that he ran across people who were able to do that bridged the gap. And, you know, they were doing things that just crossing your fingers, that didn't work. So you don't want to be a finger crosser.
And you don't want to be a finger pointer.
Exactly, exactly. Unless it's pointing right back at you. So Evelyn and I worked with a couple for a couple of years. And when they came to us, they had over $120,000 of credit card debt.
Credit cards, not the mortgage, not
not
the house.
Cars, yeah, not, yeah, yeah. Just yeah. The credit cards.
Yep.
And they got into debt the way a lot of us happen to get into debt. One of them lost their job because of health issues. It wasn't that it was laid off. The person, one of the spouses, got very sick, couldn't go back to work. In fact, she will probably never be able to go back to work. And they didn't change their standard of living. Kind of like what we did 30 years ago. We didn't have any money coming in, but boy, we sure deserved to have everything that we wanted.
It was going up pretty fast, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Is that called an ebb tide?
So they really were at a point where they wanted to get out of debt. And they applied extraordinary effort for about 4 years. The first thing was that they applied the story of the widow in oil to their personal circumstances. That's the story in 2 Kings. And, you know, the widow, her husband had just died, and he left this debt, and the debt collectors were coming. They were going to take her two boys. if she didn't pay up. And she went to Elisha and says, what can I do? And Elisha says, what do you have?
And Elisha was a godly man who gave her godly counsel.
And he was a prophet. Yeah. He gave her very good counsel. He says, what do you have? What do you have? And it took him a long time to get her to the point where she says, well, I do have a little bit of oil. You know, the same thing happened with the Talmadges. We found that they had some cash value in a life insurance policy. Yes, they still needed life insurance. But the cost of the cash value was so high, and they were really underinsured. So they took the cash value of the insurance and applied it to the debt. And then they bought term insurance and were able to get way more coverage at a lower cost. And they paid off $15,000 to $20,000 of that $120,000 really fast, almost instantly. Next, they started tracking every penny that they were spending. And they found that they were spending money on things that didn't make a difference. We all do that, don't we? So they stopped that spending, and they created a spending plan and stuck to it. And then they created a debt snowball, and we go through all that process in the Compass Bible studies. The end of that story was that in 4 years, they'd paid off over $70,000 of the $122,000. They didn't just cross their fingers. They just didn't sit there and hope that the debt was going to go away. They applied extraordinary effort.
And, you know, that their story reminds me so much of our story because we were kind of in the same position. We didn't have quite as much debt as this couple did, but we went through a long period of finger pointing and crossing our fingers and not addressing what the issues were. John, you tried to start a business and that didn't work.
No, we lost about $250,000. So, you know, there's a little bit of debt right there. And, you know, when the money ran out, we still had credit cards. So, and we weren't about to change our standard of living. Oh, no, not us. We worked hard, or we had worked hard. We deserved that money. We deserved everything that we had. Finally, you know, I admitted to myself that the way I was going about this was really a bad idea, and I kind of tucked my tail between my legs and was able to go back to the company that I'd left 5 years earlier, and I did an interview, and they hired me. And in the meantime, I was able to get a job delivering newspapers for a major financial newspaper company. And I kept that job for almost 6 months after I went back to work full-time. So I delivered papers from 11 at night. That's when I picked them up at 11 o'clock. And usually I was home again by about 5 o'clock in the morning. It wasn't fun, but it was extraordinary. And I prayed an awful lot. I prayed that I wouldn't have to go into a conference room where they turned out the lights and showed PowerPoints.
Death by PowerPoint.
But we did all the things that we've just told this couple who asked the question this morning. We began tracking every penny that we spent. We cut out all unnecessary things. And, you know, by 20 years later, we'd not only wiped out all the debt almost completely, except for the mortgage, and we moved 3 times during that period of time, but I was able to retire and become a full-time volunteer. What we're saying here to you is this is stuff that you can do. Just sit down and do it.
So the lesson you should take away from this is look at your spending habits. Evaluate where you can begin to cut or eliminate. If you have questions for John and Evelyn, email those to ask@compasscatholic.org. Next up, we're going to tackle men, women, and marriage. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Breadbox Media.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.
So glad to have you back. You're listening to Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry. We always seem to get emails, people going, we really enjoy your show. When are you on? Well, you can listen to us at any time. You can download any of the shows that we've done over the last, I don't know, year, 18 months, simply by going to compasscatholic.org. And on the homepage, scroll down about halfway down and you'll see Compass on the Radio. Open that up and it'll take you to our podcast and you'll see the various topics that we've covered over the last 12, 18 months. John and Evelyn Bean, the co-founders of the ministry, are in the studio. And
For the remaining time today, we're going to discuss men, women, money, and marriage. Yeah, it sounds like four topics, right? But no. Men, women, money, and marriage, and how it all works together. Evelyn, I give you the honors to start us off.
John, how many couples have we run into over the years since we've been teaching these biblical principles about money that one or the other of the husband or the wife used money as a control issue in the marriage? Well, we've run into a lot of those, haven't we?
Yeah, we have. And you know, that's a good point, Evelyn, because it's not a good thing. And if people are using money to control things in the marriage, then what else is wrong with the marriage, I think?
Well, it's a recipe for disaster, that's for sure.
Well, it absolutely is.
Hey, can you give me an example when you talk about using money to control things, what an example may be?
I was with a group of women a couple weeks ago, and one of the women said that she buys things and hides all the receipts and all of the tags and just hangs them up in her closet. And when she wears it, her husband says, oh, did you get something new? And she says, oh, no, I've had this in my closet for weeks, which is technically true, but she never told him that she was spending the money, and she's controlling his reaction to her overspending.
Okay.
Plus, you know, what's it doing to their budget, to their savings plan, and everything else? That can be totally destroying it. We have a friend who's done that for a long time in their marriage, and it's just a way to make sure that they're in control and you keep the other person kind of out of it.
And that's not good for a marriage in any aspect, but especially in finances, because there's so many things tied up with finances.
Yeah, yeah. And people can get embarrassed. I mean, you know, we know of people who only one person does the budget, which is pretty much the way we say it should be as far as actual data entry and stuff like that, you know, but they weren't having conversations either, okay? So it's just one person controlling the whole purse strings, and they were using credit cards to maintain a standard of living. And so they were getting a new credit card and paying off or paying down the old credit card and, you know, going back and forth and back and forth. And we know of one family that had like 13 credit cards.
And they're not really reducing debt. They're just moving the debt from one credit card to another. So
it kept getting bigger and
yeah.
bigger, which is why they needed more and more credit cards in order to be able to do all this fancy shifting.
I understand why some people would do that if they have a spouse that's abusive. But the bottom line is that hurts your marriage because you're not being honest and you're not sharing with them what's really going on. And that's very dangerous for a marriage.
It is. It is. And, you know, we do promote that only one person should be basically entering all the data in the checkbook and balancing the checkbook and keeping track of the budget. That's a good thing because if you get too many cooks in the kitchen, you know, you get pepper put in 14 times and then it's not worth eating.
It's oversalted.
Yeah. So when you do that, then you have to set specific times every month. Maybe twice a month at the beginning, maybe weekly in the beginning, and then as the budget and spending plan is kind of worked out and, you know, you both have gained confidence, then you can shift it to every other week and then maybe once a month after a couple of years. And it's a much better way to go.
So you're highly recommending that the person that does not do the data entry still keeps an eye on what's going on.
Definitely.
Well, you know, I don't like that terminology, Steve, because it makes it sound like they're expecting the other person to be doing something wrong.
It's not so much that, it's so they know what's going on.
They're
in the
up
house
to speed.
Right.
Yes.
In
yeah.
case something should happen to that person, that they can just
jump into those shoes.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Because you want to stay equally yoked. And if you don't know what's going on, then you can't be equally yoked. Well, you know, Steve, the other thing that we suggest is that maybe you should create some what-if scenarios in your discussions, things that are probable that might happen, and you're going to establish the parameters about what the solution will be for that kind of a what-if scenario.
So you're not talking about chicken being on sale on Tuesday? You're talking about things like losing a job or the stock market tanks and you're retired and your retirement fund is impacted.
I don't think they need to be that major. I mean, those are really seriously major things. But I think that things that might happen in an ordinary month, you just have some scenarios that say, well, if this happens, then we're going to do this.
So this is more like we need new cars for the tire or...
New cars for the tires?
Yeah, or new tires for the car, too. You know, either way.
It's a little more expensive when you're getting new cars for the tires.
But you're talking about stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like maintenance-type items that are coming up that you need to be aware of. And
exactly, exactly. And then when that what-if occurs, then you kind of have an idea of what the solution is for it. That doesn't mean you just run off and do it necessarily. It's an opportunity to share again. This is what we talked about. I'm ready to go do this because this has occurred. Do you agree?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if your spouse travels a lot or is out of town or whatever, and something like that happens, you already have kind of a predetermined answer to the solution so that you can go ahead and resolve it, even if they're not around and you can't get a hold of them and that type of thing.
You know, John, we see more and more people these days where the money is mine and yours, and they separate their finances into two different pots, and each of them pays for something different. What do you think about that in a marriage?
You know, in the Bible it says that you shall leave your mother and father and cleave to your spouse. That means you go from the two people who raised you to being one with your spouse. To me, that says... No, you're not supposed to have two bank accounts, his and hers, and you're not supposed to have two savings accounts, his and hers. Now, you have to for IRAs because of the way the laws are, but as a general rule, I'm not in favor of that. We have been around, you know, doing this for a long enough time that we've seen some people who operate that way and have operated that way for many, many years and have been able to successfully negotiate the pitfalls of doing things that way.
The problem is it kind of sets up an artificial barrier. If that's my money and your money and you want to buy something for the house, but I don't want to spend my money on the stuff you want, it kind of puts up a barrier in the marriage.
The couples that we have worked with that have that type of system, there's a lot of communications going on.
So a lot of good communication.
Oh, yeah, good communication.
Oh, that's
that
good.
The system works for them.
Well, and I think that communication is a key issue, mm-hmm. whether you've got just one account or you've got multiple accounts. You cannot over-communicate on your finances. You don't want to be hiding any setbacks that occur. But there is also a time where you can have legitimately, even if you only have one bank account, you can have my money and your money.
This is like a certain amount each person gets to spend without being accountable for it.
Yeah,
it's kind of like an allowance.
Basically like an allowance, yeah. You know, maybe depending on, you know, the size of your spending plan, maybe it's $25 a month or $50 a month or $100 a month. You know, it depends on what the plan is. That's your money. You don't have to account for it. You just have to know that you only have $25 or $50 or $100, whatever that amount is, and you can't spend more than that. But you can save it up over the course of several months and maybe buy something really nice. You know, I save for 3 or 4 months and you can buy a new driver, or you can blow it all at once and buy your wife flowers. Or
oh, that would be a nice idea. What do you think, Steve?
Well, I just know my wife. She'd make me eat the flowers.
Oh, is that one of those things where you come home with flowers and she says, what did you do?
Yes.
Exactly. Why did you spend money on...
Nobody in this room's been known to do that, have they, John?
What, buy flowers? No.
No, to say what you do.
Oh.
But yeah, I mean, the bottom line is most couples have a hybrid situation that works for them. The important thing is to communicate and share and make sure you define a system to share your financial information.
Yep, you're right, Evelyn. If you have a clearly defined money management system, all the way from who handles to the mail to who mails out the checks, okay? Who writes the checks and sends them out?
Or who pays the bills online.
Who pays the bills online. Whatever that situation is, without a well-thought-out operational plan, things are going to fall through the crack. And so even though it's just, quote-unquote, household finances, it's still important to have a plan and work the plan to keep things going.
And that's true with the way you teach your children how to manage money, too. There needs to be a conscious plan developed between mom and dad for how they're going to teach children what the allowances are, what kids are expected to work for, what money they're going to get for free. And that needs to be discussed between mom and dad, too. Very important.
Yeah, when you know, problems come up, and they're going to come up, when things get tough, you just address them. You talk about them. No secrets allowed. You know, if you avoid the issue, it just makes things toxic, and it can drive a wedge into the relationship. So you have to schedule. Part of your operational plan would be to schedule regular money checkups, like we talked about earlier, you know, every 2 weeks, every 4 weeks, on a regular basis. So everybody knows what's going on. You know what your goals are. You set an annual goal, and just like getting a physical every year, you need a money management fiscal every year so you know what's happening.
Now, for the couples that are listening, this part of the financial journey is crucial. That's working together. No matter what your role is in the family finances, each of you need to be communicating so the both of you are on the same page. No surprises is what we preach. Now, one phrase that you never want to hear in a marriage is, "We never talk." And we'll tell you why next. This is Manage Your Money God's Way from Compass Catholic Ministry on Redbox Media.
You're listening to Redbox Media. Find out more at redboxmedia.com.
This is Manage Your Money God's Way, and we are from Compass Catholic Ministry. We use the Bible as our textbook to get you to a great place. It's called Financial Freedom, Debt Free. Now, the Bible study that we have is called Navigating Your Finances God's Way. It's a small group, 9-week study. To see all the topics that we go through and discuss, go to compasscatholic.org. Click on Bible studies, and there you have it, Navigating Your Finances God's Way. And if you love what you read and you think the Bible study would be perfect for your parish, complete the contact form and we'll get back in touch with you. In our studio, we have the co-founders, John and Evelyn Bean. And today we're discussing men, women, money, and marriage. And one characteristic of a good marriage is communications. Without communications about your finances, your journey to financial freedom will hit a lot of bumps in the road, right, Evelyn?
Steve, you're right. There's no such thing as too much communication in a marriage. You need to talk, 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 and then talk some more. Because the important thing, especially when it comes to money, is to have open communication with no blame and shame going on.
Yeah, we all have hang-ups about money, but you've got to treat your partner with compassion. And it's not just about the communication. It's about making a plan and sticking to it. Because the more information you have, the more power you have over your finances.
So it's making a plan and sticking to it together, right?
Yep.
Both of you need to be supportive of each other.
Coordination as a team, and then you have the power over the finances. You're not a victim of your finances.
And that's, I think, the most important thing that comes from having a spending plan and tracking your spending is you get information so you can make decisions. It's not a wild guess about how much I'm spending or how much I need to spend. It's information so you can make decisions.
A lot of couples we've found, they tend to keep their parents involved in their finances, especially if they got married real young and maybe financially they were on shaky ground. And so maybe they asked for a loan from their parents, or you know, mom and dad were paying for some items to help out. They just kept paying for them as the marriage continued.
And if mom and dad are helping you with money, then they have every right to have an opinion about what you're doing with the money.
And I think the question is, do you really want your mom and dad to have any opinion where they can voice it to you? I mean, they're going to have their opinion, whether you like it or not. But do they have a role in how you spend your money?
And I think if they're supporting you, they do. But that doesn't follow what we hear in Matthew about a man leaving his father and mother and being joined to his wife and the two become one flesh. That's me, my spouse, and my parents and his parents, which is not a good recipe for a marriage.
I don't want all those people in one flesh. That's a lot of people under your skin.
So we know of one family where mom and dad continue to be involved in the child's life long after they became an adult. Mom and dad helped pay for an apartment. They helped care for the child. Whenever it needs to be done, mom and dad are right there to handle every situation, and that is not good.
Well, the problem is that I think it stunts or stifles the growth of a person becoming an adult. And that's pretty much what's happened in this situation. Any little thing happens, mom and dad get involved in making the decision. And the daughter has trouble getting a job. And when she gets the job, she has trouble keeping a job because she doesn't have any sense of responsibility or accountability. And it's just a sad situation. She doesn't have a budget. It seems like she spends indiscriminately, and it's just not a good situation, and it's one that we feel that should be avoided.
You know, when you get married, or even if you're an adult living on your own, you're to leave your parents and become financially and emotionally independent. And part of the reason to leave is because it forces you to become more mature and, as a couple, become more dependent on each other and our Heavenly Father. If you're single, it helps you become more dependent on God. And that's a good thing. When you're breaking away from home and out on your own, you really need to be out on your own. You shouldn't be going back to mom and dad and asking for a handout every week or having mom and dad treat you like you're still a child living at home.
But isn't it educating mom and dad, not the kid? Because they're starting this at a very, very young age. She's probably have had this treatment her whole life that her parents bailed her out. It's going to be tough changing her.
Yes.
It's educating the parents.
Well, so many times parents don't want to hurt their kids' feelings, or they think they deserve everything, or it's so much easier just to give in when the kid throws a temper tantrum at the store. And it's really not teaching them anything long term. So it's important to, again, with your spouse, set the standards on what you expect from your children in a financial house, and then implement it and stick to it.
I think back to that first year we were married, Evelyn. I think it was very fortunate that we were a long ways away from our parents.
Both sets
of parents.
Yes.
When any little thing happened, you know, we couldn't turn to them. We couldn't go running to them. And we had some things happen to us that were
learning experiences.
They were learning experiences for sure. You know, if we'd been around our parents, you know, we probably would have called one of them up and said, what do we do?
We would have called one of them. We would have called your dad.
Yeah. You know, what do we do? Can you help us out? In our lives, it was good. We were separated, and that was really beneficial because we had nobody but ourselves.
That's right.
When a baby eagle is born, the mama eagle cares for her, I don't know, chicks or whatever they call baby eagles.
I don't know
eagles.
What are baby eaglets.
Eaglets. After a period of time, the mother nudges that little eaglet out of the nest, and it's either going to fall to the ground or it's going to start flying.
But parents know when the eaglets are ready to fly, so it's going to fly.
Yes.
It will.
Yes. Yeah. And as parents, we should kind of do the same thing. We've got to encourage married children to transfer their dependence to each other and to the Lord.
And, you know, this can be an emotional time when you watch your baby walk out of the nest and they get married and go live with what you consider to be some stranger, really. I mean, even no matter how well you know their spouse, you don't know them from the childhood usually.
And is any husband as good a person as mama would want for her daughter?
I think it's more like dad and his daughter.
Okay.
But, you know, when they get married, it's time to let them fly the nest, to let them experience their own things, to let them get into trouble. If they ask you for your opinion, certainly give it to them in a well-couched voice and very objectively, instead of saying you do everything wrong. But it's time to let them suffer the consequences of their own decision.
Yeah. And it's amazing how smart you become as a parent the older the child gets.
Oh, when they have kids. When your kids have kids, you get really smart really fast.
But we know another couple, same community, same church, the same amount of love and care and concern for their children as the first couple. But they taught them to be financially independent from the very beginning. As their children grew up and got boyfriends and girlfriends, and you know, they didn't interfere, they supported them emotionally and that type of thing, But they weren't making every decision for them. They weren't throwing money at them. And the result is that these kids have strong marriages. They're financially secure. They're capable of making solid decisions, both financial and otherwise. And they're not a burden to their parents or to society. One way that you can kind of look at this is to compare life to a book with a whole series of chapters. And you open one chapter, and as you close one, and you move from one phase to another, one section of the book to another one. And closing some of the chapters takes courage and can be sorrowful. But in this chapter, the parent's role changes to that as a coach. And that allows the couple to make their own decisions, even if they're not the same decisions that you as a parent would make.
And that's an important thing, because our kids are not us. And just because they decide something that's different than what we decide does not mean they're wrong and we're right. It's just different. And we need to learn to celebrate the differences and encourage them to be independent.
And I think that starts at a young age.
Definitely.
You know, when you've got a 6-year-old, 7-year-old, 8-year-old, they're making decisions. And the kids today are, I think, much more savvy.
That's the word I use. Yep.
Than your parents were when you were at that same age. So I think that's important.
And it's really dangerous if you're married to be financially dependent on your mom and dad, because, as we said before, it gives them the right to judge how you spend. So don't do that. Become independent. And we've been talking about what it takes to have a good marriage and some of the principles that you need to follow to have a good marriage and get your finances straight. And we really encourage you to take the Compass Catholic Bible Study, which is Navigating Your Finances God's Way.
You know, it's going to help you and your spouse get on the same page about money. And that's just so important to be equally yoked, to know exactly what you're going to do. And you're not hiding things. You're both moving forward together as a pair. It's going to help you define where you are now. It's going to help you to determine what your highest priorities are, so that you can actually plan for the future and to develop, you know, the right steps down the road, so that together you move forward, you grow, and you're saving.
So whether you like it or not, how you communicate about money, how you handle money as a couple, has a huge impact on your marriage. So do it wisely and well.
Now, for couples that are engaged or considering marriage, we have a book co-authored by John and Evelyn called God, Marriage, and Money. It's available in the bookstore at compasscatholic.org. Now, the beauty of this book are the questions at the end of each chapter. These questions are more discussion questions for the couples to have. And in writing this book, John and Evelyn found that a discussion on finances was almost non-existent, so they put together some great discussion starters at the end of each chapter. Now, if you want to share this program with family or friends, simply go to compasscatholic.org, click on Compass on the radio, and there you will find not only this program, but all the shows from the past year, year and a half. Please join us again next week for Manage Your Money God's Way on Breadbox Media.
You're listening to Breadbox Media. Find out more at breadboxmedia.com.